And you're Scott Gilbert?
That's right.
And you were born when?
Born January 14th, 1955.
Where?
In Women's Hospital in New York City.
Women's Hospital?
Women's Hospital. Either Women's Hospital or Doctor's Hospital. I never got it straight. Either one.
And what's your permanent address?
My permanent address is 6010 N Rockcliffe Lane, Alexandria, Virginia.
Okay, let me know about the most important things in your life and just some bizarre stories and what's going on today and what path you're headed and that kind of thing.
I'm going to let it rip?
Just let it rip.
Okay.
Just let it rip, like all those reds and the whys and why you used and what you think the most beneficial thing that you might be able to help society with understanding what addiction is. And maybe some other addict looking at this book might identify and realize that there is hope.
Okay. Well, sounds like what you want is some sort of, you know, my story, but I don't really like...
Just give your normal pitch.
My normal pitch. Well, actually, I don't really... I try really hard not to sell recovery to anybody. I'm not sure that... I'm just talking to the machine now. I'm not talking to you, but get the fuck out of here.
Just talk about your childhood, growing up, your frustrations with life.
Okay.
You know, I know you're a very profound speaker, so just let it rip.
Okay. I'm ripping right this minute, okay? This is it. Where was I? Oh, yes. When you say something about a pitch, I'm not really sure that pertains. I try not really to sell recovery to anybody. I'm very selfish about it. And for the most part, you know, sometimes I feel that if, you know, nobody else ever got clean, I will be just as fine with it. I'm not real sure I want all those people out there who are using drugs to stop tomorrow. It would do me any good if they did. But that's a real self-centered and selfish way of looking at it, I think. I know that if people felt that way when I came into this, you know, Narcotics Anonymous, then I wouldn't be here, because it was only with the help of other people that I was able to stop using drugs. That started a long time ago. It was the only way I knew how to live. You know, I talk about when I was growing up. I always really believed that I came from another planet. I really never, you know, I was even a little kid. A little tiny little child. I never really thought I was born here. I thought that somehow I was taken from some other place and brought here. Because I just didn't feel very at home with the other people when I was like 4 or 5 years old. I didn't get along with the children on my block. I had 2 kids that lived next door to me, and those were the only people I talked to. And even when I stopped talking to them when I was in like, I was 5 years old, and they put me into a reading class a year ahead of myself in school. So I was pretty isolated. You know, I like to read a lot. I had a real rich fantasy life. Even up to like my 20th birthday, I used to imagine myself being like a superhero. Now, Green Lantern was one of my favorites because he'd recharge himself every once in a while. Every day he had to use his best magic, his Power Lantern, his Green Lantern, stick his hand in it, and recharge himself. And as an addict, that was sort of what I perceived that I was doing, is that I was recharging myself in order to face, you know, a new day. But I think it really started a lot when I was like around 11 years old, and I saw this, we were in school, and you know, you see these movies, and they show you these driving movies, Bloody Highway, and you know, the dangers of bad, drunken driving. They just show this junkie movie where you see a bunch of dope addicts standing around a street corner with their hands over a fire barrel. And I really thought, even back then, I used to say, boy, what it would be like to be an ex-junkie. You know, I wanted to be an ex-junkie. And although it wasn't really a conscious decision, that's how my life progressed. And that I would, I did all the things necessary to become an ex-junkie. I started using drugs as soon as I could. I remember the first drug that I had was at a Sly and the Family Stone concert in September of 1968.
Okay, You've got like 90 minutes you can talk. You can go to that side and then the other side, but don't worry about
I'm
it.
I'm not in any hurry. I'll tell you it all. Yeah. It was in 1968 at a Sly and the Family Stone concert on Thanksgiving weekend, and I was there with a couple of guys. I was 13 years old. And I had never put any substance in my body before then, except a couple of drinks, which didn't do anything. And I was wanting to hang out with the big boys, so I was hanging out with the toughest people that I knew of in my school. They weren't really close to me, but I was there with them. And somebody from another aisle passed up this pipe full of what I found out was pot. I sucked that thing dry. And I didn't feel anything, but I kept asking for more. I think I saw drugs as a way that I could belong to a group. And the group is the people who use drugs. And I wasn't really athletic, you know. When I was younger, my dad, who was a little league manager, the place that I lived, and he always sort of pressed me towards athletics, but I resisted that. And I liked my fantasy life. It was totally manageable. It was mine. Didn't have to deal with anybody else. Didn't have to follow any rules. I liked to read books. I sort of imagined myself becoming a writer one day. But when I discovered drugs, I could be whoever I wanted to be. I could say all those things to people that I never really could say before, because I was so scared, And that's really the turning point for me, that I discovered it. And from the time I was 13 years old in that day until a couple of years ago, 5 years ago, I did not have one day without drugs. 15 solid years every day. I would wake up and I would do something sometime during that day. And I think what I was trying to do was control the world through narcotics, through my body. Because to me, the world was really what I felt about it. It wasn't, the reality was completely subjective to me. I perceived it as something I could mold. I always used to think of, for a long time I shot cocaine every day. When I shoot cocaine, as it was going into my system, I used to think of it as like seeing straight through to the center of the universe, because that was the kind of experience it gave me. And that's really like what I was trying to get out of drugs. I was trying to be God, and control my universe. My history for those 15 years was basically a drug-a-log. When I started out, the way they do in the movies, I started out smoking pot. A couple of weeks later, a few friends and I decided to use acid, and I went out and bought it. And the night before we were all supposed to do it, I did it myself alone. I went and taught swimming to autistic children. I wasn't physically coordinated that night, but at least I knew that I was going to be going in with a group of people and losing my inhibitions. I knew what to expect, which is what I wanted to do. Either that, or I just wanted to get high. I don't know. I would use hash in high school, and pot, and cocaine, and amphetamines, and downs. And I didn't shoot any drugs in high school. Nobody else did, so it wasn't something that I came across. But as soon as I got out, I found it. And when I did, I embraced it totally. It was like totally pure. I could sit there by myself. In fact, it's funny what happened. I had just been arrested and let go for dealing drugs. I was in college and they came into the dormitories and arrested me and dragged me out of school in handcuffs. And a few friends came and bailed me out, which was kind of nice of them. They did. I got out of the police station. They put me in a car, drove me to a bus station. Someone threw a whole suitcase of pot in my lap, drove me back to school. And I was pretty depressed. I was there. I needed $1,500 for a lawyer real bad. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to call my parents. Eventually, I did, of course. But that night, these friends of mine came into my room. One of them held me down and held my arm. The other one shot me up full of the water. The next day, I went out and I bought myself a few grams of cocaine and got some syringes, sat in my room until I got it right by myself. I didn't like the idea of someone else doing it to me. I wanted to be in control. I wanted to have it. It was a way, shooting dope was a way for me to have the whole universe at my fingertips. I was in charge. It was amazing. You know, there was this kid who just all he ever wanted to do was run his own life, and there I was running my own life, and I was running it into the ground, but that really isn't important. What's important is that from my perception at that point, I was realizing my goal. And I lived that life for 10 years. You know, I started doing that when I was 18 years old until the time I was 25, 26. I pretty much went through periods where I shot dope every day. I discovered heroin and the lot, and one time a cousin of mine gave me 3 ounces of morphine to sell, and I shot it. I mean, I just was a needle freak. I shot water, I shot bourbon, I shot gin. I shot PCP and Quaaludes and 2-and-alls and 2-and-alls. And I mixed all of them together. I didn't really give a shit. I was a garbage head. I was a pincushion. I liked it. I remember some of the scary parts, though, real vividly. I remember the first time I ever overdosed on cocaine. A friend of mine had, when I say friend, it's real tough because most of the people I considered friends back then was like drug acquaintances, people who used the way I did. But he had brought, like, an ounce of cocaine into my house from Alaska. And it was a help yourself situation, so I helped myself to what I knew was an overdose amount. And I knew it was good, and I knew how much it would kill me, and I did just about that much deliberately, just to prove that I could control, that I could run my, you know, that I was superhuman and invulnerable. So I did it, and I dropped like a stone. And he brought me back, you know, it was artificial resuscitation. And I remember that real vividly. I had images. You know, like you talk about when you die, you see a light flash before your eyes. When I came to after this experience, besides shaking and anxiety that was just tremendous, I just had these hallucinations of my mom and dad standing in the background of my house watching me be dead. That was when I was 19 years old. One would think that I would learn from that experience that I'm an addict, and all I ever did after that was try to recapture it. I liked being dead. I mean, I liked being close to it back then. I wanted to see how close I could come to dying all the time without actually doing it permanently. It's hard to remember a lot of the drug experiences. I spent a lot of time in emergency rooms. I saw the emergency room that was in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. But it wasn't like I was living that life. You know, the person I am today, I find it real hard to identify with that stuff. Maybe it was because it was back in time a while, but maybe because the way the person I am today just doesn't have anything to do with that type of lifestyle. I don't know. And there was a time when I first, you know, when I was in school, and I went to college for 6 years. I went the first year as a full-time student. After that, I worked my way through. It was sort of something I had to prove to myself that I could get through on my own, you know. So I got a job working for the university eventually after working 2 years in a psychiatric hospital as a reality test. And I got a job for the university, and I worked my way through school that way. I majored in nothing. And then I finally had to pick a major. I picked an interdisciplinary major, which means that I created it. I don't know how the hell I got through. You know, looking back on it, I mean, I see people, like, study. We talked about college students, they study, they go to classes. I never did any of that. You know, I used drugs. I didn't go to classes. I was a very good writer, so I was able to write papers that would stun the professors to the point where they'd give me a good grade. And sometimes they wouldn't. I had an opportunity to look at my college transcript a couple of months ago. And it is at best episodic. In that one semester, you'll see that I had 4 or 5 A's. The next semester, I had a no grade, an incomplete, and an F. And the F was in, like, beginning tennis. Or in business law. And, you know, other courses I took were sound, light, and the arts, and the retrospective narrative, which is a graduate literature course. It was a pretty strange college career. For the most part, my life was entirely controlled by drugs. In literature we have, it says things like our lives were entirely controlled by drugs. And I gotta believe that, because I certainly didn't make, you know, volitive decisions. I did not do things on volition. I did them because I had to do them. I used to believe in a sense of absurd faith, watching myself do things that I did because I knew I would do them. I had a propensity for having sex with women who were about to marry other guys. I did that a lot. I don't know why. I had very strange history of relationships. I did not like to be alone, so I would find the woman who I felt was sicker or crazier than I was, and I would live with that woman. And I did that a couple of times. And it wasn't really, they weren't really healthy relationships, but they were, you know, they were long. That's what they were. They were long, and I wasn't alone. I wasn't real capable of that. Sexually, I was a very late starter. First, my first sexual experience with a female occurred when I was a college student, and, am I rambling, Jim? You're not even listening. When I was in college, living in a dormitory with three other guys in the room, and I called this woman up who was known to be rather easy with her, fuck anything. And I called her up, and I had her come over to my room to fuck me, because I had never done that before. I was 18 years old at the time, but I just never really that, you know. Women always terrified me. I was high on Quaaludes, and I passed out. I wasn't able to achieve erection then. Next couple of times, I wasn't either. First woman I ever achieved direction with and had sex with, I lived with for 5 years. I wasn't monogamous during those 5 years. I had sex with a lot of other women, but we lived together. You know, we were in a sort of a drug haze. You know, she had an outside income. Her parents sent her money, and she would support our habits. We'd steal a lot. You know, we'd shoplift in stores, and had a very favorite gas station. I would run and fill my car up and drive away without paying it. Boy, I look back, it's amazing. I survived all this shit. I had running partners too, people men who I thought were crazier than I was, who could teach me something, and each of them did. Now, a guy named Jeffrey, and a guy named Gary, and a fellow named David. I think when I was hanging out with David was then living married, or no, he was married to my first girlfriend. I gave her to him for a bag of Prosecco's. I guess she was worth it to him, but he was AWOL from the Army, and he was visiting me, and she came over with a bag of Prosecco's, and they hit it off, and I couldn't have him living with me, so I said, listen, why don't you go with her, give those to me? So I kept it down. He got married to my ex-girlfriend. Well, my first wife went and hired for her assistant, television business, which is weird, but that's the kind of relationships I had for years. The woman who I eventually married and my ex-live-in lover were best friends and, in fact, employee-employer relationship type people. Very strange. I don't know, I wasn't there. Not all the time. I mean, I think what the people in my life did not realize, and what I did not realize, is that I had a primary purpose in life then, and that was to use every day. And I didn't really care what I had to do that. If I had to be a really nice guy and love someone, I would do it with as much as I could. I would act loving and whatever it took to say hi. I didn't realize that at the time, but it was definitely true. When I was, I guess, around 26 years old, 25, right around there, I got married. I didn't know what else to do. I was being thrown off the methadone program. I weighed 121 pounds. My left leg was gangrenous. My left arm was unable to move it because I had shot a lot of bad dope in there, and I had no veins. For a junkie, I had no fucking veins. I grew up with no veins. Blank arms. Even today, I look at them, I see nothing. Just some old holes and some scars. But I mean, I ran them all out. I mean, even now, I can see people with, like, these fucking thick ropes. It's amazing. I never had that. I had these little tiny veins. They wound up shooting in my neck, and my hands, and my legs, and my feet, between my toes, under, in my groin. under my armpit. I used to have to pay people to get me off. There was once a time when people used to pay me to get them off. I used to go into this, my cousin lived in town, and he and his friends were at a different university, and they were pretty preppy group, I guess, but they used to like to do hard drugs. So I would go over to their house like once a week, and there'd be like 10 or 15 of them sitting in the basement wearing tennis shorts on their way out to a date. And I'd be sitting there with a bag of 40 unit insulin syringes and a huge bag of cocaine or morphine or heroin or whatever, and they just line up and I just pop them all. And for that service, I would get free drugs. Or I wouldn't, you know. I did this a lot of times and said they'd be my friends. Are we alone now? You and me, Mr. Machine? That's nice. My addiction took me to some pretty serious places. I've seen the business end of revolvers. I've seen a shotgun at my face. I've been in excruciating emotional and physical pain. I live with the knowledge that I've used a lot of people. I mean, it wasn't all one side of the people who I've used, and the bad things that I've done were, you know, they were part of my life. They were not, it was not something that I did with a sense of malice. It was the only way I knew how to live. I mean, what else did I have? I had no other guidelines. I didn't grow up with a sense of what right and wrong was. Right was what I needed, and wrong was what I, you know, was what I couldn't get. I also grew up with the sense that anything I did was by nature right due to the fact that I did it. Now, this is not sane thinking. This is even not even true thinking, because there was always a part of me that knew I was essentially wrong. That there was something terribly wrong with me that could never be cured. Something that kept me apart from the rest of the world, that I could never be a part of society. So 26 years old, I weighed 121 pounds. My body was very sick. I was unable to function, unable to hold a job. My parents came in, moved me back to New York, which is where I'm from, and I got married, which I guess is the only thing to do in a situation like that, because it put a huge influx of cash into my life and fixed me up real quick. I went to work for my dad, which is a very unusual relationship. And then my dad and I, even now, have a lot of antagonism toward each other. Back then, it was startling. I would run on pure hate. I didn't even need drugs for a period of time. I used them, but I didn't need them to the same extent that I always needed them before, because I could run on hate. But eventually, hate wore off, and I wasn't shooting dope back then, but I would take anything I could get my hands on. I would take Quaaludes or Tylenols until I was in a stupor daily. I would drink 10 to 15 ounces of pure alcohol every single day at 4 o'clock, between 4 and 4:15 before I went to work. My life was an insult to my body, to my emotional stature, and to my physical well-being, and I had no emotional well-being. One day I was in excruciating pain. My wife had thrown me out of the house because I was scanning checks from the back of the book and draining our account to buy my drugs. I was standing on a street corner. I hadn't shot dope in 3 years, but I was shooting dope again. I was shooting cocaine. It was 5:30 in the morning. I had nowhere to go, and I broke into my dad's restaurant to steal money out of the safe, and I couldn't go home because I had no keys to go anywhere. And I picked up the phone, and I called Narcotics Anonymous. Actually, that's not true. What I actually did was I called the marriage counselor that I was seeing at the time. He wanted me to check into a treatment center, so I could help him go get that nonsense, and I wound up calling Narcotics Anonymous. He sent me to a meeting, and it was bullshit. Well, it wasn't for me. These people were all full of shit. And I stayed high for a couple more months. I don't remember really what happened. There was a whole couple of months there where I was, like, living on the street in cardboard boxes and staying in my parents' apartment in the city, and And generally, I wasn't doing too well. I mean, I was working a little bit. I was almost functioning. But I had sort of snapped. It was like I had nothing left. I didn't have what it took to stay in after that. I was scared. I was hungry. I was lonely. I had nowhere to go and nothing to do. And there was nobody out there for me. And it just, you know, all came down all at once. And I went, and I sort of broke down, and I wound up in a treatment center. And for the first time since I was 13 years old, I had 28 drug-free days. I've been clean for 5 years since that day, which was July 25th, 1983. I know when I tell my drug log, it's sort of disjointed, but I don't remember it on a chronological basis. I remember bits and pieces of it. And I remember less and less as days go by, because it just looks, you know, from my standpoint now, it just looks like one long, sick weekend during which I was tortured by inner stuff, inner demons. Since I've been clean, a lot has gone on in my life. I've gotten a lot bigger. I weigh a lot now. I weigh almost twice 121 pounds. I don't really worry about the little things. I'm almost free sometimes. I have a lot of trouble with, like, you know, my employment, that I think I should be doing something more important and more valuable than what I do. But what the hell, you know? I'm an addict. I don't have a real sense of what I'm supposed to do in this world. I know that I've got a simple program that I work, and that is I stay clean every day. I make a commitment to that way of life. I try to talk to people the best way I can and be honest about it as possible. And I try to maintain a conscious contact with the knowledge and the power that is greater than myself. And that is not always very easy, but it's the most reassuring part of my recovery. Without that, I could not stay clean. I know that as surely as I know anything else. There's an odd of freedom that's associated with recovery, and sometimes that freedom is pretty scary, and that there really is nothing that I cannot do as long if I choose to do it, as long as I don't pick up. And there was a period of time that I was very promiscuous, that I would sleep around and have sex with a lot of different women over a period of time, and I could do that, and I didn't pick up over it, but it became uncomfortable, so I stopped. A couple of years ago, I got married again. Different type of relationship completely. I have a child. I'm a dad. I don't know of anything which is more rewarding than being a dad. I mean, so. Tonight, before I left my house, I was playing with my daughter, who was so beautiful. And she cries a lot. She's scared. And part of me gets so angry at her for being scared of nothing. Part of me just wants to get down on the floor there and cry because I'm scared too. I want to tell her what I know. And that, you know, that fear is just an irritation. It's not real for the most part. When she's four and it's real hard to talk to her like that, so I tell her to shut up, stop crying, or go to your room. Probably not the greatest of all responses, but I do my best. Let's keep talking now?
Yeah.
Keep talking, okay. What am I talking about now? I don't know. I have a very weird life, I gotta admit that. There are very few ex-junkies doing what I do. I mean, I spend most of my day going into people's houses trying to convince them to spend money that they don't have on a product that they don't need. And I do it extremely well. It's well enough to keep myself, you know, eating well, living well, own cars. I have stereo, I have a place to live, I got a wife that's more attractive than I had any right to ask in life, and more loving than I have, than I even deserve. Chris wanted me to say some funny shit, but there really isn't that much, you know, if I think about it. The funniest parts of my life is just being me, and watching how fucking nuts I really am. And I drive around all day, you know, with anger and anxiety, and it's so stupid. It's just hilarious. One time, just recently, some cab driver cut me off. I chased this man for 15 miles to kill him. And when I finally caught up with him, I didn't know what to do. You know, I still obsess over the strangest shit. You know, I argue with my boss constantly, with absolutely no concept that he could fire me, because it really isn't important anymore. I watch my child grow, and I don't know whether I'm being a good parent or not. And if something tells me that I am the best dad in the whole fucking world, because I love that child more than anyone else could. So I am the best dad that ever lived. I'm happy. It's weird, because I bitch a lot, I believe, that the more you complain, the longer God lets you live. So I bitch a lot. But goddamn, I mean, this is a better life than I had any right to expect. You know, it's treated me so well. I still have a lot of scars on my body, which will never go away, which is probably pretty good, because it reminds me of the bad, you know, the times in which I had no control. I sort of learned to accept that I really don't have that much control about the stuff that goes on in my life. I have a lot of control about what I do, what I physically do. But in terms of how people perceive me, or, you know, how I'm going to feel, I haven't got that much control. I really haven't got the control over my own feelings. But I have control over how I walk through my day. I try to do it in a relatively integrated manner. I try to maintain some integrity in my life, although it's real difficult because by nature I'm a sleepy, seedy, slimy school. Low life son of a bitch. One of the harder things for me to do is to remain monogamous. Isn't that in my stuff? The interesting part, I think, for me is that, you know, I don't know, it can't take 5 minutes, it looks like 10 minutes. No. I don't know, so the interesting part is that for so long, I lived contrary, my entire life has done contrary, or lived contrary, to my basic belief structure. You know, I was like the ultimate sin. And that if I believe that a person should be honest, I lived a dishonest life. And I believe that, you know, relationships should be monogamous, and yet I was a very unmonogamous, polygamous first husband the first time I was married. I believe that man exists basically to serve a power greater than himself, you know, be that humanity as a whole, but I lived a self-centered life beyond any imagination, any of my own imagination. So, you know, for so long I lived contrary to my own belief structure, and now it's sort of like I'm trying so hard to live in tune with my own beliefs. And that sometimes means adjusting my beliefs and recognizing that I can't always be honest, but I can try pretty fucking hard. And I can at least admit to myself when I'm being dishonest. I'm not being very funny. I know Chris asked me to be funny, but I haven't got that much funny today, you know. Not that much funny is going on. I mean, it's not sad. But it ain't breakdown laughing time. Oh, we could talk about traffic accidents. That's funny in my life. I've wrecked a lot of cars. I used to wreck them on average once every 2 months. Roll them. Exactly, I would roll them. I drove up a cliff once. I thought it was hilarious, as a matter of fact, because I was driving back to a friend's house. I had been to a party there the night before, and I'd gotten pretty high. And I went home that night, and I was going back there to pick something up. I think it was like an ounce of ash oil or something that I had left there. And I was driving back, and I saw this baby sitting in the middle of the road, so I made a left-hand turn and drove off a cliff 75 feet straight down. I got out of the car and walked away. The car never made it back up the cliff. The tow truck took it out in 2 pieces. I escaped without a scratch. And that is sort of the history of my addiction. That's why I have a firm belief in God today. Because I was so shielded and so protected. There are no permanent scars, you know, deep physical scars on me. I've got some scratches and I've got some holes in my body. But for the most part, I walked away with all my organs. My arms and legs intact, my head firmly attached to my shoulders. Not missing anything vital except for a few teeth. So I gotta believe that there's something going on out there that I'm not really in charge of, and I'm grateful that I'm not, because, you know, my imagination probably would have, you know. My sense of right and wrong would have had me dead. I was so fucking wrong as far as I was concerned that I would have knocked me off, executed me a lot of times. What else? what's going on today. I'm pretty anxious most of the time, you know. I mean, I've got a lot of peace in my life, but I go through a lot of anxiety, you know. The littlest things can set me off. If I call up my office and I get someone who's got a little rough day going on, and I hear some bad attitude on the phone, I immediately think that I'm the cause of it, and I've got all the, you know, all the stuff going on is my fault. Even though I don't own the company and do not run that company, but I think that they, you know, they rise and fall on my gastrointestinal gas. I don't know. Never o'clock exactly. I'm gonna talk to us tomorrow. Well, you're gonna. I'm almost done. I have very little else to say. You know. I'm a lucky fella, and I just gotta tell. I'm gonna start singing soon. Let me sing pious songs. I doubt it. Have I? I had a half hour. Yeah, I probably have done a goddamn half hour. Holy shit. No, I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna stop before that happens. Where am I going here? I don't know. I'm pretty lucky. I'm a very lucky person because somehow there was some divine intervention in my life that made it possible for me to live a lot longer than I had any right to expect. And all I'm doing today is trying to figure out what the rules are and trying to live by them. You know, we have something in our literature which talks about become a productive member of that society. And it's real hard. I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up. And it's just fear that keeps me from making that decision because, you know, I just want to be, make sure that whatever I do it perfectly. And there really is no way of doing that. I haven't been very profound over these last half an hour, but I hope I've given you just what you want. And I'm not going to give you back the $15.